of John, chapter 12. We're going to read verses 20 through verse 36. John chapter 12, verses 20 through verse 36. And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast, that being the Passover feast. The same came there, therefore, to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. Philip cometh and telleth Andrew, and again Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. And Jesus answered them, saying, The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it. He that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now is my soul troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I into this hour. Father, glorify thy name. Then came there a voice from heaven, saying, I have glorified it, and will glorify it again. The people, therefore, that stood by and heard it, said that it thundered. Others said, an angel spake to him. Jesus answered and said, This voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. This he said, signifying what death he should die. The people answered him, We have heard out of the law that Christ abideth forever. And how sayest thou, the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? Then Jesus said unto them, Yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walketh in darkness knoweth not whither he goeth. While you have light, believe in the light, that you may be the children of light. These things spake Jesus, and departed, and did hide himself from them. In this chapter, John chapter 12, beginning with verse 1, we have Christ's arrival in Bethany, just before the Passover. Following that, you have his triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Between that and our text verses, there are several events that John does not record, such as the cursing of the fig tree, the second cleansing of the temple. Jesus spoke some parables. And then you have our text. And John is the only one of the gospel writers who records the incident of our text, which was really the last public event before his crucifixion. It begins in verse 20 with certain Greeks. That would be Gentiles. Certain Greeks had come up to Jerusalem to worship at the Passover. We're not told specifically who these individuals were. It appears that they were Gentile proselytes, that is, Gentiles who had come to believe in the Hebrew religion, but we don't know that for sure either. In verse 21, we see that they came to Philip, these Gentiles, these Greeks, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. Now, whether they came in faith or out of curiosity, we're not specifically told, but their simple desire was to see Jesus. In verse 21, we're told that Philip was of Bethsaida of Galilee. Now that was a Gentile community, and though Philip, of course, was a Jew, he was from a Gentile area or Gentile community, as was Andrew and Peter, according to John 1, verse 44. So again, Philip was of Bethsaida of Galilee. And this is the reason that these Gentiles, these Greeks, went to Philip. They knew who he was. They were no doubt from the same area. They knew who he was. No doubt he had been somewhat of a testimony to them. And they simply say to Philip, "Sir, we would see Jesus." Again, we desire to see Jesus, or we desire to meet with Jesus. These were Gentiles. So Philip doesn't know quite how to answer them. So he goes to Andrew, who again, according to John 1:44, he's also from the same area, Bethsaida of Galilee. And he says to Andrew, no doubt, there are some Greeks, and they want to see Jesus. What should we do? Again, Jesus' ministry was primarily to the Jews. No doubt, the two of them, Philip and Andrew, consult. And then we read in verse 22 that the two of them, Philip and Andrew, go and tell Jesus. Well, what did they tell him? Well, they told him there are certain Greeks that want to see you. And then we read in verse 23, and Jesus answered them, the them being Philip and Andrew. And no doubt, probably in the hearing of the other apostles. And from verse 29, the people therefore that stood by and heard it. So there are other people standing by as well. He's speaking to Philip and Andrew. But it's in the hearing of the apostles. It's in the hearing of many other people as well. And even perhaps, we don't know, but perhaps these Greeks were near enough to have heard what Jesus went on to say. The words of Christ in verses 23 through verse 32 are in response to these Gentiles desiring to see Jesus. And the words of Christ in verse 35 and verse 36 are in response to the question that the people who were standing by had asked. In verse 34, "How sayest thou the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man?" And then what Jesus said in verse 35 and 36 is his response to that. But we must realize that what Jesus said in all of these verses that we've just read are in the relate to and are in the context of, "Sir, we would see Jesus." It's all in that context that these Gentiles desire to see Jesus Christ. This is what Jesus is addressing, that these Gentiles had a desire to see Christ. And we want to speak tonight on seeing Christ as we need to. Seeing Christ as we need to. And this is true whether you're saved or unsaved. Now, as you read these verses, there's much more here than we can possibly deal with in one message. But there are many rich and deep spiritual truths in these verses that we've read. There's much to be learned in these verses. Our prayer is that what we read here would be engraved upon our hearts and that we would adopt it into our lives. Because what we read here in our text is an absolute necessity to living a resurrected life, a life of spiritual vitality, which is ours to live as children of God. And there are truths brought out here that are absolutely necessary if we are going to live that life. First thing we want to notice is the way that we need to see Jesus. Again, these Greeks come to Philip. They express their desire, "Sir, we would see Jesus." And you have to wonder, because we're not told, why did they want to see Jesus? There could have been many reasons. It may have been mere curiosity. Remember, at that time, Jerusalem is packed. People have come to observe the Passover feast. Jesus was the center interest of all the countryside, and especially in Jerusalem. People would gather from everywhere for the Passover feast, and as they gathered, what was the topic of their conversation? Jesus. Keep in mind, the triumphal entry had just occurred. So they could have been there just out of curiosity. This desire could just simply be curiosity. Or perhaps these Greeks were disillusioned and disappointed in their own pagan religion and realizing that there was more desired to see Jesus. Or perhaps they were proselytes to the Jewish religion, and perhaps they had become disappointed in the Hebrew religion, which at that time, of course, was empty and dead within itself. But regardless of why they wanted to see Jesus, because the Bible doesn't tell us why they wanted to see Jesus, so there's no sense in getting hung up there. But regardless of the reason, what Jesus went on to say relates to this desire. "Sir, we would see Jesus." And in the response of Jesus, we see in the way in which people need to see Him. People need to see Jesus by faith. Now notice, in his response, he speaks of his death. Notice in particular, verse 23 and 24, "And Jesus answered them, saying, The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified." In verse 24, he goes on to give an illustration. "Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit." Now, in speaking of his death, he not only speaks of the manner of his death, but he speaks of the result of his death as well. So in other words, he speaks of the crucifixion. But included in that, as you read the verses, would also be the resurrection and also the ascension of Christ back into heaven, or His glorification. In fact, in verse 23, when he says, "The hour is come," he's referring to His crucifixion, but notice, he did not say, "The hour is come that the Son of Man should be crucified." But he said, "The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified." So what's he doing? He's looking beyond the crucifixion to his glorification. So his vision was his glorification. Now he's speaking of his death. He's including in that his resurrection and ascension. So he looks beyond the cross to glory. Jesus is saying, in effect, these Greeks, they want to see me. Yet there is only one way by which they can see, by which they can know and apprehend me. And that is through the hour that was now come. In other words, they do not need to see me in this earthly body. They need to see me as risen and ascended and is glorified. Of course, that would require faith. So this is how we must see him. He proceeds in verse 24, again to illustrate from a general principle of nature. When the seed is planted, it dies and becomes fruitful. The grain would eventually become the blade become the ear, and then the full corn in the ear. So what's he talking about? Again, he's talking about his death. He's saying life comes through death. Life comes through death. Speaking of his own death, he is speaking of victory. He's speaking of glorification. These Greeks, these Gentiles must see Christ. But not merely upon earth. They must see him in his glorification. They must see him in his victory. Verse 31 and 32, he talks about Satan being defeated. Now, in order to be saved, a man must see more than a historical Jesus that lived upon the earth. We're not saying that that's not important. It's very important. There are tremendous blessings at looking at the life of Jesus upon the earth. But that's not how you need to see him. You need to see him crucified. You need to see him resurrected and ascended. You need to see him victorious. And that requires faith. You don't see that with the physical eye. It requires faith. So Jesus is saying to these Greeks who desired to see him, he's saying, they need more than just to see me with the physical eye. They need something more. They need to see me by faith, and they need to see me risen and glorified. Now, in light of all of this, it's very interesting that the text begins, verse 20, with the Gentiles asking to see Jesus. And then it's interesting how the text ends, verse 36. So you have these men who want to see Jesus. And then we read in verse 36 that Jesus hid himself. That's curious. Here are men who want to see him. And Jesus hid himself. Why? Why did Jesus hide himself? Well, every commentary you pick up is going to say the same thing, basically. They will say that his eye is completely on the cross, and he did so to protect himself so that he could go to the cross. Agreed. That is probably one of the reasons why Jesus hid himself. But I believe there might be another reason as well. He has explained that these Gentiles don't just need to see me physically. They don't need to just see my physical body. So he hid himself, because that's not how they needed to see him. They needed to see him by faith. By faith. You know, people will say today, well, if Jesus would come right to my house and show me himself and tell me, I would believe. Then I would believe. Well, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. That's not how you need to see him. You need to see him by faith. You need to see him by faith dying, buried, just as that seed is buried, and then resurrected and ascended victoriously. So we have to ask the question, have you seen Jesus by faith? Have you seen him by faith?
None of us were there, but have we seen him by faith crucified? Have we seen him by faith buried? Have we seen him by faith risen and ascended for us? That's how we need to see him. We don't need to see his physical body. That's what these Greeks wanted. But that's not how they needed to see him. They needed to see him by faith. So let's make application to ourselves. You and I that are saved, there was a time in our life when we were granted faith. And by faith, we saw Jesus. We saw Jesus crucified for ourselves. We saw Jesus buried, put in a grave for us. We saw him come out of that grave victoriously for us, defeating death and the grave. And we saw him by faith ascended on high, sitting at the right hand of God. That is, glorified and victorious. That's how we saw him, by faith. Now we are to, as saved individuals, we must continually see Jesus. By faith, we must continually see him dying, buried, raised, and ascended for ourselves. In other words, we need to see more than a historic Jesus. We need to see him by faith. And he's real. It ought to be our constant aspiration. It ought to be our constant yearning as a child of God to see Jesus. The word see conveys the idea of understanding Jesus. If I see him, I understand him more. If I see him, I am able to comprehend him. I'm able to realize him more. I'm able to perceive him more. We ought to yearn to understand him more. We ought to yearn to comprehend him more. We ought to yearn to realize him more. We ought to yearn to perceive him more. More of him dying for us, buried for us, risen for us, ascended for us. That's how we need to see Jesus. And that ought to be a yearning in our hearts. Now, I believe that seeing Jesus in that way, by faith, is absolutely necessary to truly serving the Lord. I don't believe that you and I will ever truly serve the Lord if we do not see him, if we are not continually seen him. That's why the writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 12, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. There's where our enablement comes from. And I believe that seeing him is necessary for serving him, but I believe also that seeing him is a result of serving him. And I believe Jesus makes that plain. In verse 26, in relation to and in the context of, we would see Jesus. Again, keep in mind, he's speaking to Philip and Andrew. He's speaking to the apostles. There are others that are in hearing distance. But he is speaking to Philip and Andrew in the hearing of his people. And he speaks in verse 26 of service. And again, keep in mind who these words are spoken to. Now in verse 26, let's read verse 26. If any man serve me, let him follow me. That's a clause. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. That's another clause. So we have two clauses. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. That's a third clause. So in this verse, There are three clauses. And in each clause, you find the word serve twice. That is, you find that word in two of the clauses. And you find the word servant in one of the clauses. So, verse 26, what's the subject matter of verse 26? The subject matter is service. And what is the context? We would see Jesus. So the two are connected. Serving Christ, seeing Christ are connected. Now, we're not saved, of course, through service. We're not saved by service. But we are saved to serve. The Bible is very, very plain about that. We are saved, and from the very moment that we were saved, we are to live our life in service to the one who saved us. And we need to see Jesus by faith in order to do so. We need to continually be seeing Him. And as we serve Him, we do see Him. We need to see Him to serve Him. And as we serve Him, we see Him. So that's a good cycle to be in. We hear Jesus say, "If any man serve me." Each one of us that are saved ought to be able to read our name, "If any man." We ought to be able to put our name right there. Reading on, we see true service to Jesus Christ is summarized in the words, "Let him follow me." If any man serve me, let him, the one who wants to serve me, the one who does serve me, let him follow me. Now, in order to follow Jesus, you need to what? You need to see him. You need to see him. And there is no service without seeing him. There is no service without following him. Without these two words, follow me, all so-called service to him is self-service. This is absolutely necessary. Follow me. So if we follow him, then you serve him in the way that he leads. That's the only way you can truly serve the Lord, is in the way that he leads. It's not the way you and I want. It's not the way someone else wants. It's the way he leads. We're serving him. So follow him. True service, again, is following him. We only serve him as we follow him. You cease following him, you cease serving him. Everything centers around these two words, follow me. And the subject is service in verse 26. So this is the everyday calling of every child of God. Regardless of our age, regardless of our position, regardless of our circumstance, this is our everyday calling. Follow me. And we have to see him in order to do so. So you have to ask, well, what does it mean to follow Jesus? Well, Jesus here is speaking of a lifestyle. He's speaking of a way of living life. It is a lifestyle of priority. To follow Jesus means that he is the priority. It is a lifestyle that has our attention and our focus is upon him. To follow him means to come or go after him, to accompany him, to attend, to pursue him. That's what it means to serve the Lord. It is a lifestyle of closeness. To follow is to draw near. You have to be able to see him. You have to get close enough to see him. There is no true service if we're separated from the Lord. There has to be a drawing near. It is also a lifestyle of separation. To follow Him means that we leave behind other things. We leave behind other things. It's a life of separation. But it's also a lifestyle of belief. To follow Christ is to believe Him. It is to identify with Him. It is to be in agreement with Him. You are in agreement with Him. You are not apart from Christ. There is no true service of the Lord without believing His teaching. Without believing who He is. Without seeing Him. It is a lifestyle of obedience. To follow Christ is to recognize His authority. It is to recognize the authority of Christ, and it is to obey Jesus Christ. So you see, these two words are basically just summarize what it means to follow Him. To follow Him is a lifestyle of imitation. It is a lifestyle of conformity to Jesus Christ. Because Jesus Christ is the true servant of God. He epitomizes, He embodies, He illustrates, He demonstrates what it is to be a servant of God. And we're to follow Him. It is a lifestyle of commitment to Him. If we're going to follow Him, we have to be committed. Now again, there is a difference between interest and commitment. Everybody in Jerusalem that day had some sort of interest in Jesus Christ. It may not have been a good interest. Some were there to kill Him, but every single one there had an interest in Jesus Christ. But there weren't very many who were committed to Jesus Christ. And everyone here tonight has an interest in Jesus Christ, but do not confuse the two. An interest in Jesus Christ will not lead to a life of true service. It takes commitment. It takes commitment. It takes following Christ. Now notice, again, in the context of we would see Jesus, verse 26, if any man serve me, let him follow me. Now this next clause, only it makes sense. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. If you follow someone, you'll end up where they are. That's what Jesus is saying. If you follow me, you'll be where I am. And if we're where He is, what happens? We see Him. We're able to see Jesus Christ. Now, earthly masters want some separation between themselves and their servants. If you're an employer, you don't want your employees coming home with you every night. You want some separation. Not so with Christ. He doesn't want any separation. He wants us always to be where He is. Well, how do we get to where Jesus is? By following the world? No. By following the crowd? No. By following our own human reasoning? No. By following Him. He says, if you follow me, where I am, there shall also my servant be. So let's think of where Jesus is. Jesus is in a place of communion with God. And if I follow Him, I'll be where He is. Jesus is in a place of assurance and calm. And if I follow Him, I'll be where He is. Jesus is in a place of victory. And if I follow Him, I'll be where He is. So service to the Lord will cause you to be where He is. You can't serve Him without following Him, and you can't follow Him without being with Him. So service to the Lord will cause you to be where He is. Having said that, that is a good measurement of our service. Are we where He is? Are we where He is? We are if we follow Him. So if we're not where He is, what's the problem? We're not following him. We're not following him. He goes on, where I am, there shall also my servant be. Does that not speak of fellowship? We're with Christ. So there's an ongoing knowledge, there's an ongoing experience, an ongoing friendship, an ongoing togetherness and identification with Christ. Seeing him, we follow him. And following him, we end up where he is and we see him again. Sirs, we would see Jesus. And you and I that are saved, this needs to be so. And then he goes on to say, if any man serve me, that is, who is it that serves him? It's the one who follows him. And what's the result of that? You end up where Jesus is. He then goes on to say, him will my Father honor. That is, How will God honor us? Here's what I believe this verse means. You can disagree if you want to. But it's in the context of, sirs, we would see Jesus. How does God honor us? By letting us see Jesus. And if we follow him, we'll end up where he is, and God will honor us by seeing him. Again, it's that cycle. So what is necessary to this life of service? Well, in verses 24 and 25, it applies to his hour, but it also applies to verse 26, our service. Jesus states in verse 24 a general principle of life, which he applies to himself and he applies to you and I. For you and I that are saved, there is a life within us. Eternal life is within us. The very life of Christ is within us. How is that life released? Through death. Through death. He makes application of this truth in verse 25. He that loveth his life, that is, his earthly life, shall lose it. Why is that? Because the things of the earth pass away. You hang on to this earthly life, you will lose it. This life is fading. He goes on, and he that hateth his life in this world, comparatively speaking, hating it comparatively to spiritual life, shall keep it unto life eternal. That is, he that hates material life in relation to spiritual life will gain spiritual life. For real, genuine spiritual vitality, we must lay aside ourselves. We, like that seed, must be buried. When that happens, spiritual life bursts forth. That is how we can live the resurrected life. That is how we can live a life of spiritual vitality. We must die. Not physically, but our old nature must be crucified. And then spiritual life bursts forth. What he's saying is, and then when that happens, we see Christ. We see Christ. Again, it's that cycle. We need to invest our life in Christ. Take a dollar bill. And if you take that dollar, use it for yourself, what will you get? You'll get whatever a dollar buys. That's what you'll get. But you take that dollar bill and you invest it. Hopefully you'll get more than if you had just spent it on yourself. That is true spiritually as well. Take your life, spend it on yourself, and what will you get? Yeah, about a dollar's worth of life. That's about what you'll get. But if you invest it, and where's the best place to invest our lives? Christ. You invest your life in Christ, and spiritual life bursts forth, just like that seed that is planted. There is no life more enjoyable. There is no life more peaceful. No life more safe than a life that enables us to see more of Jesus Christ. So, in closing, in order to serve the Lord, first of all, if you're here and unsaved, in order to be saved, you need to see by faith Christ. You do not need to see a physical Jesus. You need to see Him by faith. Crucified, buried, risen, and ascended. That is, glorified and victorious. That's how you need to see Him. You and I that are saved, there was a time when we saw Him that way. And now we are to serve Him with our life. And our life is to be one of spiritual vitality. In order for that to happen, we must continually see Christ. That enables us to follow Him. And if we follow Him, we end up where He is. No better place to be. And if we end up where He is, who do we see? We see Him. We need to see Jesus. If you're here and lost, you need to see Jesus. You and I that are saved, we need to see Him. We need to see Him every day. I can, you can too, you read the gospel accounts, and I can put myself in the place, and it's almost like I can see Him. I just wish I could get that picture out of my mind of long-haired Jesus. But we can picture. But we need more than that. We need to see Him by faith. This ought to be our constant desire. We would see Jesus. When we come to church, it ought to be to see Jesus. Amen. When we leave church, it ought to be we would see Jesus. When we get up in the morning, we would see Jesus. That needs to be the desire. That needs to be the pursuit of our life. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us in prayer.